You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 24th, 2021. I'm Emily Dodds from Drake University. Here's our first story. A feature story by Mike Bronley, titled Council Bluffs City Council Approves FY 2022 Budget. The Council Bluffs City Council approved the fiscal year 2022 budget at its Monday night meeting. The council voted 5-0 to approve a budget that includes a tax levy of $17.53, down from $18.26, and the lowest in at least 18 years, according to Mayor Matt Walsh. City officials said they wanted to lower the levy because of the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on citizens and because of increased property valuations. The proposed FY 2022 budget had initially planned on an $18.26 levy, but after Congress passed the most recent pandemic relief bill, the budget was amended. The budget, minus the updated levy, can be read below. Quote, "We wouldn't have increased tax levy, but valuations have gone up," end quote. Walsh said of the levy decrease during the meeting, quote, "Since it's a two-sided formula, it would have been a significant increase. Hopefully, the reduction will help," end quote. With the state's property tax rollback, the levy is assessed at 55% of a home's taxable valuation. Residents with a home valued at $100,000 would pay $964.15 for the year in city taxes. That does not include school and county taxes. The budget includes $157,522,989 in expenditures and $144,081,027 in revenue. That does not include $12,558,276 in operating revenue and $119,055,727 in operating expenditures. City Finance Director Kathy Knott noted to the Nonpareil last week that the budget included $4,400 in assessed depreciation for the city's sewer system and $275,000 in assessed depreciation for recycling center infrastructure, which accounts for the perceived perception. The city is required to assess for depreciation, but Walsh said last week, quote, "That's a paper transaction," end quote. The city will receive an estimated $24,615,234 through the American Rescue Plan, passed by Congress earlier this month, for use to cover COVID-19 expenses and make up for lost revenue. Full guidance on how cities can spend that money has yet to come. At Monday's study session, the council thanked Knott for her work on the budget. Upcoming Potawatomi Conservation Programs by Emily Sheeb. Oak Inventory Project Training at Hitchcock. A recent discovery has found a disease that has emerged in the area that could eliminate the sprawling oak tree population. There is still little known about this disease. Starting on April 20th at 7 p.m., the Hitchcock Nature Center will start a three-part training session for a volunteer project to understand the threat. Quote, "Training sessions will cover a variety of topics and include field training sessions to help volunteers practice their skills and become independent project volunteers," end quote, a press release said. Quote, "Topics covered will include the project and field data collection app, oak ecology, and oak fire wounds," end quote. Some of the training will take place outdoors and off the trails, so those attending will need to dress appropriately as well as bring their own smartphone. Participants will need to download the project and data collection app for the training sessions, said the release. Other items participants should bring include a notebook, water bottle, and snacks. This program is free and doesn't require an entry pass for the park. Pets will not be allowed at this event besides service animals. Witchy Woods Walker Springtime Edition, Dustin Clayton, naturalist and folk magic practitioner, will host a walk through the Luss Hills to focus on folkloric practices that take place in the spring. The walk will be at noon on April 24th at the Hitchcock Nature Center. This program is intended for those 16 years old and up. Participants will discuss the plant, animal, and mineral communities common in our area, and some of the ways our ancestors interacted with these elements of the natural world during this liminal season, a press release said. Bug spray and water are recommended for this walk, and participants should make sure to dress for the weather. Cost is $12 per person, and pre-registration is required at potconservation.com. Due to COVID-19, masks must be worn inside buildings, and participants will need to sign a waiver when arriving at either event. Hitchcock Nature Center is located at 27792 Ski Hill Loop in Honey Creek. For more information, call 712-545-3283. Discussions continue over rezoning of Bond Street. Emily Sheeb. Council Bluffs Mayor Matt Walsh, as well as the other city council members, received a letter from Terry Gibson, attorney at law with Wandro & Associates, on Tuesday regarding keeping Bond Street open. The committee to keep Bond Street open, organized by Council Bluffs residents, retained the firm and came together after the City Council approved the application from the YMCA of Greater Omaha. The application included vacating a block of Bond Street. Previously, the City Council approved the rezoning of land southwest of the Charles E. Lankin YMCA, 235 Harmony Street. This would make the land administrative professional district, removing the residential area it is now. Quote, "For the reasons stated in this letter, we believe the actions of the City Council to be improper and in violation of the Council Bluffs City Code, as well as the Iowa Code, and have advised our clients accordingly," the letter stated, end quote. On November 10th, 2020, the YMCA application came to a hearing before the City Planning Commission, where it decided to deny the application. The letter said the commission specifically found the YMCA application, quote, "would result in vacating a fully improved roadway, which is utilized by the neighborhood for on-street parking and traffic circulation," end quote, and that the request would be disruptive on the traffic patterns in this area of the city. November 23, 2020, with the initial reading of the council's consent agenda, City Council approved Ordinance 6435 that included the rezoning in the YMCA application. The public hearing for the ordinance was then scheduled for December 14, 2020. December 14th, the application was brought to the City Council for a public hearing where the Council voted 4-0 to deny Street Ordinance 6435, Resolution 20-289 and 20-290, Councilwoman Melissa Head abstained from voting as she is a member of the Council Bluffs YMCA's advisory board. At the City Council meeting on January 11th, Councilor Roger Sandow motioned to reconsider the street ordinance and resolutions that were previously denied in December. Then, at the next council meeting on January 25th, the council approved both the street ordinance and the resolutions on a 3-1 vote. Quote, "The City Council's actions in initially denying and then abruptly reversing field and approving Street Ordinance 6435 and Resolutions 20-289 and 20-290 to grant and implement the relief sought by the YMCA of Omaha in their application, which was denied the only time that it was presented to the City Planning Committee, violates the Municipal Code of Council Bluffs as well as the Iowa Code, and therefore the actions are illegal and unenforceable," end quote, the letter said. It was previously reported that YMCA officials said the changes would allow the organization to add additional parking while building an outdoor pavilion, sports court with basketball hoops, terrace seating using a natural slope, and a walking path. Gibson requested this matter be heard at the next City Council meeting on April 12th. Lewis Central budget would reduce tax levy. Tim Johnson. Lewis Central Community School District has proposed a budget for 2021 to 22 that would lower its tax levy by 22 cents per $1,000 of taxable valuation. The district's Board of Education held a public hearing on the budget during its meeting Monday night. Members will vote on approval of the budget during their next meeting on April 5th. Under the proposed budget, the school district's levy would decline from $12.26 to about $12.04 per $1,000 of taxable valuation. This is possible in part because of a large increase in the valuation of the district's tax base, according to Andrea Ray's business manager. The budget anticipates total revenue of $35,836,686, including $1,366,052 in flow-through dollars from Green Hills Area Education Agency and spending authority of $37,016,985, including $650,000 in spending authority from the current year. Unused spending authority can be carried over to the following year, but this is not cash, just permission from the state to spend that amount. Quote, Lewis Central's general operating fund budget is substantially influenced in terms of total budget authority and funding components by Iowa statutes, end quote, Reyes said in her budget presentation. The state controls 74% of the district's funding, voters control 14%, and the board controls about 13%, she said. State funding includes state foundation aid of $15,100,082 set by a state formula and special revenue, such as a funding designated for at-risk students, English language learners, special education not covered by the federal government and others. The Iowa legislature approved a 2.4% increase in allowable growth of state aid, which will provide an additional $169 per pupil for a total of $7,227 per pupil per year. The board controls property taxes within limits set by the state and the physical plant and equipment levy within state limits. Components controlled by voters include the local option sales tax, instructional support levy, debt levies, and possible additional PPEL amounts. The board controls property taxes within limits set by the state and the physical plant and equipment levy within state limits. Components controlled by voters include the local option sales tax, instructional support levy, debt levies, and possible additional PPEL amounts. In addition, miscellaneous sources of revenue include state, federal, and private grants, interest income, student fees, rental fees, and tuition from students who open enroll into the district. In other business, the board did the following. Approved a bid of $38,441 from Townsend Co. for their purchase and installation of bleachers to replace those on the side of the Lewis Central Middle School gym, not completed in the first phase of the project. Townsend, which also did the work in the first phase, submitted the lowest of three bids. Approved a bid of $134,395 from B&D Diamond Pro Incorporated for needed work and renovations to the Lewis Central High School baseball and softball fields. B&D submitted the lower of two complete bids and anticipates finishing the work before this year's season begins. Approved the purchase of Handwriting Without Tears and Keyboarding Without Tears materials for 25 teachers and 450 to 500 students from pre-K to first grade, plus professional development at a cost of $17,844. The administration wanted to have quote, consistent evidence-based instruction in handwriting and keyboarding, end quote, according to Kim Jones, curriculum and instruction coordinator. Approved the purchase of licensed wireless point-to-point connection from SmartWave at a price not to exceed $34,719, pending funding approval through the USAC E-rate process. and a resulting district cost of 13,877 and a resulting district cost of $13,877.60. Lewis Central is able to purchase E-rate approved equipment at a 60% discount based on the percentage of students who qualify for free and reduced price meals. Approved to the purchase of network switching devices with licensing, optics, cabling, and installation from Riverside Technologies at a price not to exceed $299,877. Pending funding approval through the USACE rate process, resulting in a district cost of $119,950.96. Approve the purchase of UPS devices, including management software, from the Riverside Technologies at a price not to exceed $20,334.15, pending funding approval through the USAC E-rate process, resulting in the district cost of $8,133.66. Approved the purchase of 800 HP Chromebooks from Riverside Technologies for $225,600 as part of the district's Chromebook replacement cycle. RTI submitted the lowest of three bids. Bluffs business owner and wife arrested in connection with state investigation, staff reports. The owner of two businesses in the historic 100 block and his wife were arrested in connection with an investigation by the Iowa Alcoholic Beverage Division and Department of Revenue. Council Bluffs police said Frank and Cindy Hoover were arrested on suspicion of ongoing criminal conduct, a Class B felony, and various tax evasion and reporting violations. Police said local officers and investigators from the state of Iowa's Department of Revenue and state's Alcoholic Beverage Division served search warrants on two Council Bluffs bars, Beer Feast, formerly known as Cube Ultra Lounge, 162 West Broadway, and Rodeo Saloon and Barbecue, 164 West Broadway. Authorities suspect the owner of these businesses, Frank Hoover, of committing tax fraud. Cindy Hoover, Frank's wife, is the owner of Broadway Properties, LLC, which owns the buildings in which the two bars operate. Since 2017, the Iowa Department of Revenue has reportedly not received personal individual income tax filings for either Frank or Cindy Hoover, and no corporate filings for the Cube Ultra Lounge, Rodeo Saloon and Barbecue, or Broadway Properties, police said Tuesday. The investigation has also determined that Frank Hoover has allegedly underreported more than $1.4 million in sales revenue to the state of Iowa for the two bars since January 2018. An additional search warrant was served this morning at the Hoover's personal residence in the 300 block Perrin Place, police said, after being questioned by investigators. Both Frank and Cindy Hoover are arrested and booked into the Pottawatomie County Jail. The investigation is ongoing, police said, and anyone with additional information or knowledge of the situation can call the Council Bluff Police Department at 712-328-4728. Two Council Bluffs residents arrested in drug-related case. Tim Rauer, Plattsmouth, Nebraska. Two Council Bluffs residents were arrested over the weekend on suspicion of felony drug charges that began when officers responded to a shoplifting call at a local convenience store. More than 14 grams of crystal meth, along with a gun and other items, were found when their vehicle was pulled over north of Plattsmouth shortly after they left the store early Saturday morning, according to the Cass County, Nebraska Sheriff's Office. Philip Davis and Breanne Richards, both 24 of Council Bluffs, were booked into Cass County Jail following their arrest on the U.S. Highway 75 and Bay Road. Davis was arrested for being a fugitive from justice bench warrant, suspicion of driving under suspension, and suspicion of possession with intent to deliver. Bond was set at $6,000. Richards was arrested for suspicion of possession of a controlled substance. Both remained in jail as of Monday. A third individual, Mitchell Waller, 29, also from Iowa, exact hometown unavailable, was cited for theft and misdemeanor drug charges and released. According to the Plattsmouth Police Department, officers were called to the Casey's convenience store on Highway 75 and Oak Hill Road shortly after midnight Saturday morning on a report of suspicious shoplifting by several people. Upon arrival, officers learned that those people had just left in a blue Jeep Liberty heading north on that highway. Deputies were immediately notified and quickly pulled them over at Bay Road. Deputies learned that there were fictitious license plates on the vehicle and that the driver, Davis, was allegedly suspended from driving as well as having an active warrant on him. After the occupants got out of the vehicle, a search was made and the meth was found in several baggies along with drug paraphernalia. The gun, exact type unavailable, was found in the back. Items taken from the store were also found. Waller admitted to those thefts, the department said. Two car crash sends one person to the hospital, Courtney Brummer Clark. At least one person suffered serious injuries in a crash on Veterans Memorial Highway Friday evening, Council Bluffs police said. According to the release, the police department, the two vehicle crash occurred at 6:29 p.m. Friday at the intersection of South 24th Street and Veterans Memorial Highway. A 2001 Ford Ranger was westbound on the highway. At the same time, a 2005 Chrysler Sebring was eastbound on the highway, making a left turn to go north on South 24th Street. Preliminary investigation indicates the Chrysler turned in front of the Ford, causing the crash, the release stated. A passenger in the Chrysler suffered life-threatening injuries and was transported to a local hospital, police said. The department did not release the name of the passenger and drivers pending an investigation by the Council Bluffs Police Traffic Unit. March Food Pantry Box Drops Announced. Tim Johnson. Story Street Pantry and its partner pantries will hold five USDA Farmers to Families food box distributions this month, beginning Saturday. There will be an evening distribution on March 19th in Council Bluffs so people can pick up boxes after work and school. During February, the pantry's community organizations in Iowa and Nebraska worked together to distribute 9,504 food boxes in 9 days, according to Lauren Noss, a co-founder of Story Street Pantry. Quote, volunteers from multiple organizations helped to distribute food boxes in snowstorms and sub-zero weather, and were never discouraged, he said. We cannot thank everyone enough for the work they did. The distributions would not have been successful without each community working as a team, and we look forward to working with them again in March and on future projects. End quote. March distributions will be as follows. Saturday, noon to 4 p.m., Carter Lake Community Presbyterian Food Pantry, 3030 North 9th Street, Carter Lake. March 13th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Oakland Community Center, 614 Dr. Van Zee Road, Oakland. March 18th, noon to 4 p.m., San Andreas Lutheran Food Pantry, 4440 South 25th Street, Omaha. March 19th, 4 to 7 p.m., Our Savior's Lutheran Food Pantry, 313 Story Street. March 27th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Oakland Community Center, 614 Dr. Van Zee Road, Oakland. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 24th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Emily Dodds from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this, or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. Iowa Views, permanent courtroom cameras to live stream trials would add transparency in judicial system. The following editorial was published by the Des Moines Register on March 18th. The charges against Des Moines Register reporter Andrea Soori and her acquittal have been well documented by media all over the world. What should not be overlooked amid the coverage and commentary about the case? The value of the public being able to easily watch the 3-day trial online in real time. The live streamed proceedings were a model for other courtrooms in Iowa and around the nation and were made possible by Drake Law School and its first year trial practicum. For 1 week, Each spring, all classes for first-year law students at Drake shift to an actual trial held on campus. The unique endeavor, now in its 24th year, allows students to witness every phase of a trial. They watch jury selection, they can talk with the attorneys, judges, and even jurors after a verdict. In previous years, students have observed cases dealing with burglary, vehicular homicide, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, involuntary manslaughter, first-degree murder, and other charges. Quote, "The courtroom on Drake campus is a designated state courtroom, and the 5th Judicial District can have a trial there anytime," end quote, said Steve Forentano, director of the trial practicum. Quote, "We keep an eye out for a trial and may ask for it to be moved here. Judges recognize the value of the program for law students and are willing to participate," end quote. "The value of this program was expanded from law students to all the rest of us when Drake selected the trial for State of Iowa versus Andrea Soori. The defendant was working for this newspaper covering a protest when she was arrested and charged with interference with official acts and failure to disperse. In a typical year, Drake would live stream a trial to only a few students unable to attend in person. Some members of the public might show up to watch on campus. This year, the school opened access online free to anyone in the world to watch the trial. It had 7,700 unique views of the proceedings, including from the United Kingdom and Germany. Those of us watching quickly realized this was not an episode of Law and Order. It was better. More of this transparency should come to courtrooms. We got a more in-depth education in court proceedings, learning about everything from objections to pretrial discovery to spoliation instructions. In layman's terms, spoliation refers to possible destruction of evidence that should have been preserved. Lawyers stumbled with questions. Witnesses fumbled with face shields. Police officers explained protocol for body cameras and squad car public address systems. Judge Lawrence McClellan, who presided over the trial, later told an editorial writer he forgot the cameras were there until he saw himself on the news. Thanks to Drake, we watched the judicial branch in action. More of this transparency should come to other courtrooms. Cameras have been allowed in Iowa courtrooms for more than 40 years, but are rarely used for extended trial coverage. Typically, only when local news or media or courts-oriented cable channels dedicate resources to covering the most attention-grabbing portions of high-profile cases. It's time for that to change. Public oversight of the judicial branch is important. Cameras let voters gauge the performance of judges and weigh whether elected county prosecutors are justified in the decisions they make on which cases to pursue. They allow friends and family members of the accused to witness trial proceedings from a distance. That is important for those who cannot afford to travel and pay for lodging during hearing. And it's especially important for those during an infectious disease pandemic. Cameras ensuring the frivolous prosecution of innocent defendants like Soori can be witnessed by interested people all over the world. Quote, "People forget courts are the third branch of government, and they should have the same expectations about openness and transparency," end quote, said Robert Pratt, senior U.S. District Judge of the Southern District of Iowa. Quote, "Public oversight of the judicial branch is important," end quote. Alas, the federal judiciary does not permit even still cameras or audio recording equipment at any time. Cameras in courtrooms make that public oversight easier. Yes, some additional funding and staff would be required to ensure confidential conversations are muted, exhibits can be seen, and jurors are not filmed per Iowa's courtroom rules. But letting the light shine on our judicial system, a system that has incredible power over the freedom and the future of the accused, would be worth the investment. Rodney Cool. Rodney E. Cool, November 17th, 1962, March 22nd, 2021. Rodney E. Cool, age 58, of Carter Lake, Iowa, preceded in death by Father Norman and Brother Mike, survived by wife Joni Cool of Carter Lake, Iowa. Children, Tyler Michaela Cool of Carter Lake, Iowa, Taylor Cody Volkert Cole of Correctionville, Iowa, granddaughter Riley Cool. Visitation will be Wednesday, March 24th, 2021, 4 to 8 p.m., with family present 6 to 8 p.m. at Harvey Funeral Chapel Graveside. Service will be held Thursday, March 25th, 2021, at 10:30 a.m. at Oak Hill Cemetery, Plattsmouth. Memories may be directed to the family. Arrangements by Brian P. Harvey Funeral Home, Plattsmouth, Nebraska, 402-296-4445, www.bpharveyfuneralhome.com. To plant trees in memory, please visit our sympathy store. Peggy Ord. Peggy Lou Ord, age 70, of Council Bluffs, Iowa, passed away Saturday, March 20, 2021. Born September 13th of 1950, preceded in death by her parents, Roy and Buna Ord, brother Roger Ord, brother-in-law Larry Carmen. She is survived by sisters Connie Carmen, Susan Dawin Iliff, nephews and nieces Michael Hunter, Tim Anne Marie Hunter, Michelle Scott Grisau, Daniel Don Iliff, David Allison Iliff, along with many great nieces and nephews, friends, extended family. Services Thursday, 11 a.m. at the Cutler O'Neill Meyer Woodring Bayless Park Chapel. Visitation Wednesday, 5 to 7 p.m. at the Bayless Park Chapel. Memorials directed by the family for the care of Peggy's dog, Ellie. Hawkeyes grind out victory but may have lost Wieskamp. Don Doxy. Iowa City. The Iowa basketball program honored some special seniors, gutted out a tough victory over a bitter rival, secured the number 3 seed in the upcoming Big Ten tournament, and even retired a number on Sunday. It hopes it didn't lose one of its best players for the postseason games that are yet to come. Seniors Luca Garza and Jordan Bohannon spearheaded a late rally with considerable help from freshman Keegan Murray as the number 5 ranked Hawkeyes won for the 7th time in the past 8 games, holding off number 25 Wisconsin 77-73 at Carver Hawkeye Arena. Garza capped his home career with a 21-point, 16-rebound performance, then was surprised to learn in a post-game ceremony that his number 55 is going to be retired by the school. Quote, "The biggest thing today is I wanted to come out here and get a win and get some momentum going into the postseason," end quote. Garza said afterward, quote, "I was just happy we were able to grind it out against a team we could see again," end quote. Bohannon scored 10 of his 16 points in the final 3.5 minutes, making big plays as so often to close out the Badgers. He also collected 6 rebounds and 8 assists. "Those guys were not going to let us lose this game," end quote. Iowa coach Fran McCaffrey. The victory sends the Hawkeyes, 27-14-6 Big Ten, into the postseason on a roll, but it remains to be seen whether or not Joe Wieskamp will be rolling with them. The 6'6" guard forward suffered a lower leg injury during a scramble for a loose ball with 8 minutes 16 seconds remaining in the first half. He laid on the court, groping in pain at his right ankle, and needed to be assisted to the locker room. He watched the second half in a protective boot. McCaffrey said he did not know the severity of the injury, but said it helps that the Hawkeyes do not play again until Friday night in the final quarterfinal game of the Big Ten, possibly against this same Wisconsin team. Wieskamp was in the midst of one of his best stretches of his career when the injury occurred. He made all 5 shots he attempted, all with a hand in his face, and scored 12 points in 12 minutes to help the Hawkeyes compile a double-digit lead. Quote, "He looked like he was on his way to 40 today," end quote, McCaffrey said. Quote, "He was really moving well with the ball, without the ball, playing with great confidence," end quote. The Hawkeyes carried the lead into the second half and built the margin as high as 12 points. However, Micah Potter, Brad Davison, and point guard Dimitric Trice, who did not score in the first half, combined to bring the Badgers back. They took a 49-48 lead on a Davison three-point field goal with the 12 minutes and 2 seconds remaining, and the game settled into an ultra-physical back-and-forth fracas that Bohannon likened to a football game. The score was stuck on 56-56 for more than 3 minutes before the Badgers surged into a 69-65 lead on threes by Potter and freshman Jonathan Davis, sandwiched around a Bohannon drive to the hoop. Murray, who finished with 13 points and 6 rebounds, countered with a 3-point play of an offensive rebound, and Bohannon regained the lead on 2 free throws with 1:08 to go. Davis reclaimed the upper hand for Wisconsin with 2 free throws, but Connor McCaffrey tied it with a free throw. When he missed his second shot, Murray maneuvered inside for a rebound and called timeout before falling out of bounds. When play resumed, Bohannon coaxed Trice into his 5th foul, flinging the ball at the hoop as he went down. He made all three free throws to give the Hawkeyes a 74-71 edge. Quote, "It was just me being aggressive late game," end quote, Bohannon said. Quote, "I knew I had the advantage going down the floor with Trice being in the foul trouble," end quote. Murray fouled Davison on the other end, but a video review determined that the Wisconsin senior had hooked Murray on the play, resulting in a flagrant foul. Badgers coach Greg Gard was enraged by the call and said he feels Davison is being singled out by officials. Quote, "It appears to have become the Brad division rule," he said. "It's become a joke," end quote. Both players made their foul shots, and Bohannon was tied up on the ensuing inbounds play. But the Badgers' Aleem Ford missed a three-point attempt and Garza rebounding. CJ Frederick added a clinching free throw with 9.2 seconds to go. Potter led Wisconsin 16-11, 10-10, Big Ten, with 23 points, with Davidson adding 14. The Badgers will have the number 6 seed in the Big Ten tournament, which means a victory Thursday at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis sets up a third meeting in little more than 3 weeks between the Badgers and the Hawkeyes. Following the game, the Iowa players remained on the court as Director of Athletics Gary Barta announced that Garza's number will be retired. McCaffrey had pulled Garza aside to tell him what was happening and warn him that he would be asked to speak. Quote, "I was just really happy we won the game, and then for the coach to tell me that it was a surreal moment," end quote, Garza said. He got very emotional as he addressed the crowd and thanked everyone, saying his decision to come to Iowa changed his life, concluding, "I love this place." McCaffrey said he not only was proud of Garza, but of the way his team performed Sunday and all season. Quote, "I want to cherish what they did today, enjoy it, get some rest, and then turn the page to do what we have to do in Indianapolis," end quote, he said. 4 Council Bluffs basketball players chosen for statewide All-Star Games. Mike Brownlee. A quartet of local prep basketball players will play in the annual Iowa Basketball Coaches Association All-Star Games, which feature the best seniors from around the state. On the girls' side, Lewis Central forward McKenna Petapier and Abraham Lincoln guard Jillian Shanks will play for the Northwest team, coached by Lynx head coach Chad Shaw and Okoboji head coach John Adams. And for the boys, the AL forward duo of Noah Sandbaugh and Christian Tidian will play for the Northwest team, coached by Sioux City Helen head coach Andy Foster and Sioux Central head coach Stephen Tidon. The All-Star Game Series will be held on March 27th at Dallas Center Grimes High School in Grimes. The event features 4 teams for both girls and boys, with morning games used to determine the afternoon consolation and championship matchups. In between, there will be a 3-point contest. On to state. Lynx beat Southeast Polk 58-43 to punch ticket by Devin Schnodig. The disappointment of losing in the sub-state final a year ago was with replaced with Pure Joy Tuesday night for the Abraham Lincoln boys basketball team as they topped Southeast Pogue 58-43 at Thomas Jefferson High School to earn the school's 17th trip to the state tournament. Quote, last year was timid, waiting to see what they, Dowling, were going to do, end quote. Lynx head coach Jason Isaacson said, this year, I thought they had a better look. I thought they were more poised and ready for this moment. Quote, you can't put a value on experience. Our seniors last year were such good leaders. They really installed in these guys that work ethic. Last year, we were just a year away. End quote. Senior Noah Sandbott led the Lynx with 21 points and added 6 rebounds. Quote, it was just amazing, he said of the final seconds of the game. I've been working for that my whole 4 years of high school, end quote. After a back and forth first half that round found the Rams up one at the break, the Lynx came out ready to go in the third. Quote, we told the kids at half, we feel really good, Isaacson said. If Jamison Gruber, plays a little smarter and we get him for a full half, we probably have a run coming, end quote. And did that run ever come, spurred by Sandbott? With AL leading 30-26, the senior scored the next 6 points for the Lynx as they extended their lead. After Josh Dix hit a step-back jumper to put AL up 38-28, Sandbott punctuated the quarter with a put-back dunk where he was also fouled. Quote, we just knew we had to put our foot on the gas and not let up, end quote, Sandbott said. Quote, he's phenomenal, Isaacson said of Sandbott. Going in, we thought that was a great matchup for us. He's so good attacking the rim, and their guys are 6'2", 6'3", and he can play above the rim. We knew once he, Sandbott, got to his spot, he was going to finish, end quote. AL won the third quarter decisively, 17-3, with Sandbott and Dix scoring 13 of the team's 17. Quote, I think we pressed a little bit, Rams head coach Alan Jenkins said of the third quarter Lynx run. Took some bad shots, had some turnovers. I'm incredibly proud of our guys, end quote. He was complimentary of AL's defensive effort. Quote, I think their defense obviously give AL credit. They were really good defensively throughout, said Jenkins, who previously coached at his alma mater, Atlantic. Isaacson had a feeling the Lynx run was coming. Quote, I was telling my assistant coaches something's going to happen, Isaacson said. Something always happens in these games, end quote. The Lynx hit 10 free throws in the fourth quarter to ice the game and earn a trip to the state tournament. Quote, at this time of year, it's those little tough things, rebounding, loose balls, doing your defensive assignments. I thought we put it together in the second half and made a nice run on them, Isaacson said, end quote. The Lynx also got a solid game from the junior star Dix. He finished with 18 points, 11 boards, and 4 assists. Dix also had 2 resounding dunks, including one to open the second half. Josh sets the tone for sharing the ball. He really tries to make the team go, Isaacson said. And then he will go on those little spurts where he gets a couple of buckets and adds to the separation. While Dix gets a lot of recognition for Lynx, his coach is impressed with just how unselfish he is. Quote, we want to be a little more. Like, shoot, dude, you're really good, Isaacson said with a smile. You're trying to get them to tone it down. We're trying to tell them to shoot more, end quote. Junior Jamison Gruber added 12 for the Lynx after being in foul trouble in the first half. Sophomore guard Riley Edwards led Southeast Pogue with 11 points, while junior Kamoria Carmoon scored 10. The Lynx, now 19-4, have earned a 2 p.m. game on March 10th in Des Moines against Ames. AL will be the number 6 seed in the tournament. Samba summed up the sentiment, his teammates, and the AL faithful. It just feels amazing. Southeast Pogue, 12-17, 12-13, 3-15-43. Abraham Lincoln, 18 to 4, 13, 11, 17, 17, 58. Southeast Polk, Kermiah Carmoon, 10, Riley Edwards, 11, Boone Bain, 2, Chase Bartlett, 7, Dominic Caggiano, 8, Caleb Daniels, 1, James Glenn, 4, A.L., Christian Tidian, 5, Lennox Brown, 2, Jameson Gruber, 12, Josh Dix, 18, Noah Sambot, 21. We have nothing to lose. Trainers, girls, ready to make waves at state tournament, by Patrick Donahue. Wednesday morning, the trainer girls basketball team will return to a familiar setting at Wells Fargo Arena for the Class 2A state tournament. The 10th-ranked and 7th-seeded Cardinals clash with second-ranked and second-seeded Dyke New Hartford, 23-0, at 10 a.m., will mark their 17th state tournament appearance and 4th in the last 5 years. But this particular trip highlights how big a step forward for the Cards, 20-4, have taken following a down year in 2020 in which they won only 8 games. The year prior, the Cardinals won the Class 2A championship and graduated plenty of season's experience. The year that followed was about team bonding and maturity, and payoff came this winter. Quote, "Last year we were coming off a title team that had a lot of experience and a lot of talent," trainer head coach Joe Chapman said. "Last year, our girls were learning to play without some of the girls from the state title team. It took a while with our system and what to do. Fortunately, this year it carried over a little quicker than we thought. We've always trusted the system and how we coach it. This year, they just perfected the little things that we worked on, and it's come together." One player who played on the 2019 championship team is current senior Mandy Stodgdill, who has emerged from role player to veteran leader. She'll be making her third trip to Des Moines when the Cardinals take the court Wednesday. She's truly enjoyed the journey of getting back to Wells Fargo Arena. Quote, "Last year was definitely rough," Stodgdill said. "We were working out some kinks, and we knew going into this year that we had to come together as a team. We had talent. We were just really young. We knew we were capable. We just had to play every game our hardest and not take one possession off. That's what got us here, and it feels pretty good." End quote. Not surprisingly, Trainer's toughest test of the season awaits in the quarterfinal round. Unbeaten Dyke New Hartford is making its 4th consecutive state appearance. The Wolverines lead Class 2A in points per game allowed, 27.7, and are 3rd in points per game, 60.4. They also lead the class in point differential, 34.7. Steals, 19.9, are 2nd in assists per game, 16.1, in offensive rebounds per game, 15.3, and 5th in field goal percentage, 42.5%. The Wolverines feature 2 players with double-figure scoring averages in freshman Pater Petersons, 14.1, and sophomore Ellery Knock, 11. Junior Sophia Hoffman leads Class 2A in assists per game, 7, and is 4th in steals per game, 4.9, while adding 7.6 points. Quote, they pose a little bit of a problem," Chapman said. "We're going to have a little different game plan than we've had the rest of the year. It's some new learning, but that's okay. Sometimes when it's late in the year, if you have some new things to learn, it actually keeps them a little bit more engaged," end quote. Trainer sophomore Clara Teagland, and her teammates know a tall task awaits with Dyke New Hartford, but the team has confidence in the game plan. Quote, "We have very good coaches that have broken down the film for many hours," she said. They watch film all night and put in the hours for us. At practice, we go over it and over it, and they drill it into our minds. We like being the underdog, so it will be a fun game," end quote. The good news is that defense has been calling a card for the Cardinals all season. They rank 3rd in 2A, allowing only 32.3 games per game. A 2-3 zone defense has been very beneficial for Trainer throughout the year, but they also adjust in-game, whether it be switching to a man defense or pressing their opponent in order to have a better command on game tempo. Teagland leads Trainer with 13.2 points per game, and Stodgdill adds 10.8. The Cardinals also get good contributions from senior Alyssa Keller, 7.5, freshman Alexa Schwartz, 4.8, and junior Emma Flathers, 3.4. The Cardinals have shown they're capable of momentum. They enjoyed a 12-game winning streak in the middle of their season and defeated Lawton Bronson, West Monona, and Underwood in regional to earn their state berth. Quote, "It's been so rewarding," Teaguin said. "Last year, we didn't come together and our team chemistry just wasn't there. This year, as the season has gone on, we came together and our defense has been very strong offensively. We're good at kicking out and getting people open, and that's been used to our benefit this year," end quote. Chapman had confidence in his team, but like all the other squads around the country, he worried the team would suffer with a lack of preseason prep due to COVID protocols. But to his pleasant surprise, the team adapted and made the most of a tricky situation. Quote, "Over the summer, we didn't really have much time because of COVID," Chapman said. "We had some workouts we could get in. We had two tournaments, and I was certainly surprised at how well we were doing, that the pieces of the puzzle were there. I thought we'd have to play real well, and a lot of things would have to bounce our way for it to work. I think the Glenwood game showed that we can hang with anybody and help the girls realize if we stick to our game plan, we can hang with anybody," end quote. The Cardinals played tough but lost against Glenwood, who entered today's Class 4A state tournament, the number one seed. "It's been a rewarding journey for Trainer to get back to Des Moines. By no means is the work done, but Chapman feels the pressure is off his team. They're viewed as underdogs, and they know if they follow game plans as they have all season, they'll give themselves a chance." Quote, "It's new to all of them," he said. "They're very excited. Just hitting that first shot or making that first stop is key. We're going to take the game 2-3 minutes at a time and try to win the first 120 seconds, and we'll go from there. We just need to keep the game in pieces, see where we're at, and make adjustments." There's a different type of pressure on us this year. We have nothing to lose. We just need to give it all we have, and I think some good things can happen. Abraham Lincoln boys ready for state showdown in Ames, Pat Donahue. March 2020 isn't a month remembered fondly by most. The effects of COVID-19 were beginning to be felt in the United States. Schools shut down, prep athletic activities were canceled or postponed in an effort to flatten the curve. Iowa felt the effect too. The conclusion of the boys' state basketball tournament marked the end of all prep sports for 3+ months. Without regular practice, athletes had to get creative with their training. Abraham Lincoln's Josh Dix was no exception. The junior guard decided to make the most of his time. With no gyms open and no weight room sessions to attend, he trained at home during quarantine. He'd shoot hoops outside. He built muscle during at-home workouts. He lacked no motivation as the Lynx had just wrapped up a 21-2 season that ended with a humbling 58-35 loss to West Des Moines Dowling in the sub-state finals. The results are now apparent. Dix weighed 160 pounds at the end of his sophomore campaign. Now, as six-seeded Abraham Lincoln, 19-4, prepares to face third-seeded Ames, 17-3, at 2 p.m. on Wednesday in the quarterfinal round of Class 4A state tournament at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines, the Lynx's leading scorer checks in at 185 pounds. Quote, "Josh isn't even close to the same kid he was last winter," AL coach Jackson Isaacson said. "He really improved his body in the offseason. We joke around saying that he went into quarantine a boy and came out a man. He really attacked workouts at home. He has taken himself to another level. He wasn't happy with last year, so he really changed himself," end quote. Dix has had a double-figure scoring average since his freshman season, but he's improved those numbers each of the last 3 years. He enters Wednesday leading the Lynx with 19.4 points per game in Division I offers from Colorado State, Drake, Northern Iowa, South Dakota State, and Missouri, Kansas City, according to 247 Sports. He's had a major role in taking the Lynx back to state for the first time since 2016, but Dix is the first to acknowledge the reason they're back at Wells Fargo is that his teammates' contributions have been just as impactful. Senior Noah Sambot averages 13.4 points per game, junior Jameson Gruber chips in 11.9, and senior Christian Tidian does a little of everything with 17.6 points, 2.1 blocks, and 7.9 rebounds per game. Senior Lennox Brown, 4.9 points per game, and junior J.R. Noss, 3.3, and senior Ben Woe, 3, have also played important roles this year. Following the difficult ending of last season, the roster came together to put in the necessary work to make sure their season would conclude in Des Moines. All of us, after last year got together and started working out as a team over Zoom calls because we knew where we had to go, Dick said. Noah Christensen and J-Mo all put in the work. Everyone has, and it's showing. We've got a lot of good scout guys that put in the work and help push us in practice all the time. Everyone has been grinding since we got off last year, and it's paying off, end quote. The payoff has arrived. Wednesday marks AL's first trip back to Wells Fargo Arena since 2016, when it dropped a thrilling 60-58 decision to Cedar Falls in Isaacson's first trip to state as head coach. A deep Kyle Krull three-pointer in the game's final seconds tied the score between two Cedar Falls free throws, with 0.2 seconds left proved to be the difference. Now in Isaacson's ninth season at the helm, he faces another tough task in the quarterfinal round. Ames enters as one of the hottest teams in the field as winners of 12 in a row. The Little Cyclones are led in scoring and assists by junior Taman Lipsy, who averages 16.9 and 4.9 respectively, and holds offers from Iowa State, Minnesota, and Nebraska, according to 247 Sports. Ames also features double-figure scorers in junior Travion LeBeau, 11.5, and senior Kayshawn Brooks, 10.9. They've got a great team and are playing about as good as anybody right now, Isaacson said. Their point guard, Lipsy, is obviously the real deal. Containing him and making everything tough for him and making him work is going to be big. They've just got a really nice team and they defend really well. We're a little longer than we've been in the past. We match up well with that, so it's a matter of going out and executing and making some plays, end quote. The Lynx counter with the ninth highest scoring average in Class 4A, 64 points per game. They've won 13 of their last 14 games, including 3 in a row. They've done a good job preparing themselves for the rigors of the state stage. AL's four losses have come to teams from three states and each qualified for its respective state tournament. West Des Moines Dowling, the 5 seed in Iowa, Millard North and Bellevue West, Nebraska, and Blue Valley Northwest, Kansas. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 24th, 2021. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. Iris volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about today's broadcast or any Iris program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. I'm Emily Dodds from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for listening.